This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Just as long as I can remember, every 4 years about November, folks who wouldn't talk to me on the street are coming in my house and wiping their feet. Kissing my wife, kissing my babies. Well, I guess they'd even kiss my old mule if she hadn't voted for Roosevelt. Now they shake my hand and they smile and say, I'd like to have your vote come election day. Now you don't need to know where I stand, just vote for me as many times as you can. That'll be $10 now and $10 more, just every time that you vote. Now I promise you that if I'm elected, I'll raise the dead and have them resurrected. I'll fix your road, put a bridge on your creek, and sweep out your cow barn myself twice a week. Now there just might be something to that, 'cause I ain't never seen nobody else that can shovel that stuff as fast as a politician. The election's come and the road's still muddy. You try to find your old good buddy. He's up at the courthouse grinding his axes. Only thing won't get cut is your taxes. I've been sliced this way so many times, I'm starting to look like a tomato. The hand you shook behind the plow, that hand is in your pocket now. You look for your mule and find it's missing. Better start hunting that politician. But there's one good thing, if it weren't for politicians, the rest of us folks wouldn't have nothing else to laugh at except Nixon.
Hello, and welcome to Mountain News and World Report. I'm your host, Willa Johnson. It's been a big week in Kentucky, from right here in Letcher County all the way to Frankfort. Stories happening in our communities have been making waves and getting national attention. We just heard audio recorded by Ada Smith in Frankfort on Monday, April 2nd, when school was closed in all 120 Kentucky counties, as teachers flooded the Capitol protesting a bill that cut their pension benefits. Here in Letcher County, teachers and community members stepped in to make sure students were fed, even though schools were closed. WMMT's Rachel Geringer stopped by the Hemphill Community Center where meals were being prepared.
I'm Keisha McBee, and I am the gym teacher at Martha Jane Potter. And today we are in Hemphill, Hemphill Community Center. We are serving students lunch today due to the no school for the rally in Frankfort. So, you know, it's our heart to make sure that our children are served as best as we can. And with there being no school today, that means a lot of kids don't eat. So we want to make sure that every student has the opportunity to be able to be fed today.
And so for listeners who might not be up on what's happening in Frankfort today, can you tell us a little bit about what's happened to lead to this, that there's no school in Kentucky today?
As of now, Governor Bivens has, he's trying to take our pension plan. You know, that it's not just our pension, it's not just our retirement, but that includes funding for our public schools, you know, our FRISC, our Family Resource Centers, which are the core, really, of our schools in providing what our students need on a day-to-day basis. There's threats of all kinds of things being cut, and, you know, we're not going to sit back and let our kids go without or things be taken from them, so we're fighting back.
Do you have a sense of, like, how many did some teachers from Letcher County go over to Frankfort today? How are people dividing up who's staying and helping students here and who's going down to Frankfort?
for the most part, I think they've taken, I think they said the last count was several hundred from Letcher County going in. That count, I'm sure, increased overnight. The majority are in Frankfort. However, there are some of us who had obligations here at home or our children. You know, we didn't have sitters and things like that. So the ones that could not go stayed here to branch out to help the children here. But the majority, I think, of Letcher County schools, our teachers are in Frankfort right now for the rally.
And how did this kind of get coordinated? Deciding, it sounds like y'all are doing a lot of deliveries today of food. How did you figure out where to take food and how's it being coordinated?
Just a core group of the educators, you know, our children, our students, even when we're not at school, that's what we think about. So, you know, when this come about and questions arose as to how are they going to eat, or are they going to eat, or, you know, are they going to have means to eat, a core group of us got together and just kind of brainstormed, and everybody just joined in. And, you know, one led to two, and two led to 20 and 30 and 40. And people have donated money. People have donated items. They've donated food. They've brought soup and drinks and crackers and sandwiches and things like that. So we just kind of worked together and split up in locations on opposite ends of the county. That way we could reach all of our students. And we've just kind of, you know, through Facebook and through Messenger and creating groups, we've all worked together. And the ones that could not go have agreed to volunteer here. You know, our Family Resource Center conducted a list. I know for Martha Jane specifically, and I think Neon did, and I think Whitesburg did. Some of the teachers got together and emailed the staff as a whole, and the Family Resource Center created list of names and addresses and phone numbers for us to get in contact with these families and be able to reach out and branch out to them.
I'm Celeste Johnson. I've been retired since 2002. I taught 7th and 8th grade language arts at Fleming Neon Middle School. I have a daughter that now teaches at Fleming Neon Middle School, and so I felt the need to come out today and help provide lunches for kids that are not in school while she's at Frankfort. So I just had a really big need to do something.
And could you sort of describe why teachers are so upset about this pension bill? What's been happening, and what led them to all walk out of their schools today and head to Frankfort?
Well, of course, it's pension cuts for retirees. They were really going to be hit hard. Retired teachers were losing a lot of benefits. Teachers under 65 losing their medical insurance. Things that we've always paid into, our cost of living. Every paycheck I ever had, I paid my cost of living, I paid my insurance, I paid everything. It was a contract for us that's been broken. So it really hurt retired teachers. New teachers coming in will probably be the ones that will never see any of the benefits that we have had previously. Teachers that are teaching, that's taught for a few years, like my daughter, is single and has two children that she supports by herself. And her insurance will go up to over $1,000 a month. So it would be very difficult for her to even live on her own. So teachers like that, it's going to hurt so bad. But what really hurts me is the cuts that they want to do to our public schools and the programs that we must have here in our area that's very poverty-stricken. They're wanting to cut all those programs. I don't know what our children will do. I mean, that's why we're here today, to try to feed them, because we know sometimes that's the only meal they get. But it's those budget cuts that really bothers me the most, is the programs they're wanting to cut out. I mean, why? Why do they always pick on the educational system? I mean, if Kentucky needs anything, it's good schools and educate our children. And this just all seems to be wanting to take it away in favor of charter schools, which would be a joke around here. From what I know about charter schools, they're for the wealthy. There's not very many people wealthy around here. They have the right to pick and choose what students they want. If they don't want special ed kids in their school, they don't take them. So,
what else do you think people need to understand either about why teachers are in Frankfort or about what you all are doing here and why this is important here at the Hemp Hill Community Center today?
What we're really trying to get parents to understand is we're doing a lot of social media stuff, is what all will be taken away from their children at their schools. And that's what most of the teachers are there fighting for today, is their children and their schools.
Teachers and public employees aren't the only Kentucky workers trying to figure out how to respond to new laws passed in Kentucky's State House. Amid a historic surge in black lung cases in Appalachia, Kentucky lawmakers approved sweeping changes to the state workers' compensation programs in late March, including changes that will likely make it harder for the minors disabled by black lung disease to get medical benefits from their employers.
William McCool is a 64-year-old former coal miner from Letcher County, Kentucky. McCool has advanced black lung disease. Health experts say the condition is entirely preventable with dust control measures, but today, more miners in Appalachia are getting diagnosed with severe black lung than ever before.
I worked all my life. I've seen a lot of coal go down the belt line. I mean, somebody's made money. But the cheapest thing a company's got is the worker. And that's the truth. Everything else costs them all kinds of money, but they can get workers.
Black lung is a disabling condition caused by the work environment, so miners like McCool are eligible for benefits. The state and federal government both have systems that allow miners to claim medical expenses and a small stipend from their employer. Getting approved can be a long process.
State black lung compensation took about 2 years, then probably 5 or 6 years I got federal black lung.
Some miners have waited over a decade for a decision on their federal black lung benefits. Many die before they receive them. State benefits have traditionally been quicker and more friendly toward minors, but black lung attorney Evan Smith says that's been changing.
Especially in recent years, states have kind of been having a race towards the bottom.
This week, the Kentucky legislature approved sweeping changes to the state's workers' compensation programs, including for black lung disease.
On its face, the amendments in relation to the black lung laws may seem very benign, but they have a quite nefarious purpose.
That's Philip Wheeler, an attorney in Pikeville, Kentucky, who does a lot of work for clients seeking state black lung benefits. Wheeler says the new bill reduces the number of doctors who are eligible to diagnose black lung for state claims.
I do believe the coal industry is writing this bill to exclude certain doctors that they don't like.
Among those excluded is Brandon Crum. He's the doctor who first alerted federal researchers to the spike in cases of severe black lung, which has since been confirmed as the largest cluster of the disease ever documented. Radiologists like Crum are generally considered to be the doctors most qualified to read x-rays in black lung cases, yet the Kentucky legislation would bar them from providing diagnoses for state benefits claims.
The chest x-ray would only be able to be read by a pulmonologist, so I was quite surprised with it.
I asked William McCool how he thinks the change in eligible doctors would have affected his claims process.
It'd be pretty much impossible, because I've had lung doctors tell me that I don't have black lung.
In House debate on the bill, Letcher County Democrat Angie Hatton warned the measure could hurt minors.
When we're finding increased amounts of this illness, it seems to me that this is when they need us the most. Why are we making it tougher for them to prove their illness?
Adam Koenig is a Republican from Kenton County and the bill's lead sponsor. He defended the changes as necessary to fix constitutional issues.
No one here is trying to deny anyone from getting their black lung claims. But the fact of the matter is the way we're doing it now is not constitutional. And so we're trying to fix it.
Philip Wheeler, the black lung attorney, says he believes that the newly passed bill is itself unconstitutional.
You betcha we're going to file some challenges.
The bill awaits Governor Matt Bevin's signature. Miners who file for benefits before the changes are implemented may still be able to use the current system. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Letcher County, Kentucky.
The teacher's strike and that last black lung story have both made national headlines. A third story that's gotten interest across the country centers on a piece of land right here in Letcher County. The U.S. Bureau of Prisons issued a record of decision, signaling that they are moving ahead with plans to build a federal prison on a former strip mine near Roxana. Local opponents of the prison and their national allies say that they're considering suing to prevent the construction of a new prison. For the Ohio Valley Resource, WMMT's Benny Becker has this update.
Emily Posner is a civil rights and environmental attorney who's been working with local and national organizations who are against building the proposed prison. Now, she's part of a team of lawyers who are reviewing the newly issued Record of Decision for a potential legal challenge.
If there are violations of federal statutes, then we will, you know, pull the trigger and file a lawsuit.
The prison has been boosted by Congressman Hal Rogers, who serves on the powerful House Appropriations Committee. His district, Kentucky's 5th, is a mountainous area where immense amounts of coal have been mined. Today, it has an unemployment rate more than double the national and statewide averages. Prison building is one of the main ways Congressman Rogers has tried to bring jobs to the area. This would be the 4th federal prison to be built in his district. Rogers told television station EKB the process is moving forward because of his advocacy for the project.
I got the call from the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. I had met with him and brought this to his attention that it was still waiting the final paperwork. Well, he got on it. Now, this means eventually some several hundred new federal jobs for a region that desperately needs good jobs.
Posner, the lawyer working with groups opposed to the prison, takes issue with the way that Rogers describes the prison. She cites research findings that new prisons tend to have a negative impact on the economies of struggling rural communities.
I think it is disingenuous to be telling his constituents that he's going to be bringing all of these jobs to their community when the social science is something completely different.
Posner is also critical of the argument that the prison needs to be built to address overcrowding.
I've never seen this where the agency, out of one side of its mouth, is saying we need this, and out of the other side of its mouth is saying we don't, under oath in front of Congress.
What Posner is referring to is testimony from U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who explained the Trump administration's decision to remove prison construction from its budget proposal and return the money that had already been allocated. Congressman Rogers rejected the argument.
Given the current volume of inmates and given the projections for the future, the Bureau of Prisons just didn't feel that we needed that facility at this time.
General, the Congress decided this. It's been passed. It's the law. We've got terrific overcrowding. Yes, we've made some reductions in recent years, but not enough. But this has been decided, and we expect it to be carried out.
The new prison was first proposed in 2005, but had been stalled by a lengthy environmental review process. The Record of Decision clears the way for the Bureau of Prisons to start spending from the nearly $500 million that have been allocated by Congress. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Letcher County, Kentucky.
As national conversations rage about gun control, the Ohio Valley Resource spoke with students in the region about their views in advance of the March for Our Lives rally that took place on March 24, 2018. While the march is now over, these students' thoughts on guns and safety in their schools are as relevant this month as last.
Gun culture runs deep in the Ohio Valley, but even here, the growing national student activism on gun safety is taking hold. The Ohio Valley Resource spoke with students from around the region to sample opinions. Some come from gun-owning families. Some participated in the March for Our Lives protests. Two attend a Kentucky school where a shooting in January claimed two lives. Here, in their own words, are their thoughts on activism, school safety, gun control, and Second Amendment rights.
I'm Seth Adams. I'm from Marshall County High School, 15, and I'm from Kentucky.
My name is Morgan Smith. I am an 11th grader. I'm a junior at Sherman High School in Seth, Boone County, West Virginia.
I'm Lula Free. I'm 14 years old, and my school is located in Kentucky.
My name is Patrick Duffy. I'm 17 years old. I attend Wheeling Central Catholic High School in West Virginia.
Yes, I will be participating in the March for Our Lives event because I feel like it's a very important thing for our community. This march is not to bring divisiveness into our community. It's really to bring awareness to the culture change that we need in the United States and in our county as well. For me, it's going to bring some peace.
To me, it's just kind of a healing process. Just getting together with these people and putting together ideas, writing this speech, just coming together and, like, being productive and doing this thing, like, no matter what it is. It feels like we're returning to normalcy and we're kind of, there's a sense of unity.
I will not be attending the March for Our Lives event. For me, the march is about gun control. It's being pushed as a march to honor the lives of the victims of Parkland, but the real message is gun control. I feel like I wouldn't be allowed to participate in it. A few days ago, when all the schools had the walkouts, a couple conservatives came with signs saying, "I support the Second Amendment," and they were actually asked to leave. So there's definitely one message, one central message being pushed there, and it is gun control.
And I don't want to take away anyone's guns. That's not what we want to do at the rally. That's not what we want to do here. Do I feel safe at school? This one's a little bit tricky, especially with what happened at my school. I do feel safe when I'm in class. When I'm around a large group of people, not particularly. In the mornings especially, I don't feel safe because we stand in long lines to get our bags checked.
We did use the training during the shooting. We came into the room and closed the door. The chair was locked. Turned off the lights, filed into the corner, and stayed quiet. I've been doing it ever since fourth grade, basically ever since I've been in school. It just feels like just normal every day. You know, we do this sometimes. We sit in the corner in the dark and be quiet. And I think that was one of the more surreal parts, is the training being used, the routine being actually applied to a real life situation.
I shouldn't be afraid to go to school. I shouldn't have to think about this, getting up and going to school in the morning. I shouldn't have to be worried about my friends who aren't from the state or in other schools. I shouldn't have to worry about them getting killed.
What would make me feel safe? I don't really think anything ever can make me feel safe the way I did before.
I definitely feel very safe in my school. I actually would feel perfectly comfortable with teachers having concealed carries. You know, if they're properly trained and certified, then I feel confident in their abilities and safe in their company.
I think that there should be gun storage laws. There should be punishments incurred if your firearm is easily accessible and something is to happen with it.
What I feel is important is for, and of course, the law enforcement to actually enforce these laws. Also, I feel fine with restrictions on guns that prevent them from being, you know, fully automatic, you know, such as bump stocks, like we saw in the Las Vegas massacre.
We just want safe gun protection, and we also want safe storage, and that's what we're mainly going to be advocating for.
If you're walking around Walmart with a gun on your side, I see nothing wrong with that. It's for self-defense if something does go wrong, because how crazy of a world we live in. Don't get me wrong, I'm pro-guns. I hunt on a regular basis, and my family owns a lot of guns. But there are certain types of guns which I don't think belong in anyone's houses. And here, you can pretty much legally get any type of weapon.
Everyone's thoughts and prayers are so beautiful, and I really appreciate them. But it's not action. We need action. We need change. We need different things than what we're doing right now.
That's it for this week's episode of Mountain News and World Report. If you'd like to listen to this or previous episodes again, you can find it on our website at www.wmmt.org or on SoundCloud. Music on this episode is from the June Apple recording of PsyCon with a tune called Talking Politician. I've been your host, Willa Johnson. From all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
Just as long as I can remember, every 4 years about November, folks who wouldn't talk to me on the street are coming in my house and wiping their feet, kissing my wife, kissing my babies. Well, I guess they'd even kiss my old mule if she hadn't voted for Roosevelt. Now they shake my hand and they smile and say, "I'd like to have your vote come election day." Now you don't need to know where I stand, just vote for me as many times as you can. That'll be $10 now and $10 more, just every time that you vote. Now I promise you that if I'm elected, I'll raise the dead and have them resurrected. I'll fix your road, put a bridge on your creek, and sweep out your cow barn myself twice a week. Now there just might be something to that, 'cause I ain't never seen nobody else that can shovel that stuff as fast as a politician. The election's come and the road's still muddy. You try to find your old good buddy. He's up at the courthouse grinding his axes. Only thing won't get cut is your taxes. I've been sliced this way so many times. I'm starting to look like a tomato. The hand you shook behind the plow, that hand is in your pocket now. You look for your meal and find it's missing. Better start hunting that politician. But there's one good thing, if it weren't for politicians, the rest of us folks wouldn't have nothing else to laugh at except Nixon.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.